Welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast, Identify the Hidden Drivers, Part 1 of 3. Hi, I'm Nathan Ives. Along with my co-host, Lucas Ives, we'd like to welcome you to this edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, Identify the Hidden Drivers, Part 1 of 3. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag posts found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. This podcast examines the best practice of identifying hidden performance drivers during a strategic analysis, thereby enabling the organization to focus its efforts on mission goal achievement through the elimination of distractors and propagation of constructive behavior reinforcers. So now, without further delay, let's get started. Well, hey, Luke, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Nathan. How are you?
Well, I'm very good. Hey, I wanted to take this opportunity first to welcome you to the first time you're a co-host on the Strategy Driven Podcast, but also to welcome you to the Strategy Driven team because you're our newest contributor online.
Well, thank you. I'm certainly honored to be part of the Strategy Driven team and happy to be here today as part of your podcast. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Hey, we and I know our listeners and readers are really benefiting from your insights on communications. I know we've got two articles up online right now, and the next one is on management and leadership and having a professional and leadership image that your person would portray. So looking forward to that one here in the coming weeks.
Good. I'm glad, and I'm looking forward to writing many more.
All right. Hey, we're looking forward to getting more insights. Hey, and before we get started tonight, and I know our listeners are always accustomed to hearing me talk about this up front, we want to ask for them to vote for us on Podcast Alley, and they can do so by clicking the link on the Strategy Driven website up in the upper right-hand corner, or by going to Podcast Alley at www.podcastalley.com. And they'll see us in the business section. You know, we've been fortunate. We have been ranked either number 2 or number 3 amongst all of the business podcasts, of which there's over 2,100 now, for the last, it's got to be like 4 or 5 consecutive months. So we're really, really happy about that. And the other thing I want to ask our listeners to do is if they're iTunes subscribers or users, I guess, if they would leave us a review on iTunes. So what we always ask for that. We've gotten 2 people so far that have given us reviews, and we're very appreciative of those.
And I encourage that as well. And it just speaks to what a great podcast it is, the fact that we've been ranked number 2 or 3. So good job on that.
Yeah, we really appreciate that of our listeners. So, having gotten our normal administrivia out of the way, shall we get started with tonight's topic?
Yes, let's get started. Nathan, I've listened to these podcasts in the past, and they are definitely quality podcasts. But the past podcasts have tended to focus on processes and methodologies. Now, this podcast appears to be a departure in that we'll be discussing personnel motivators and behaviors.
Well, Luke, that's right. We and, you know, there's a lot of other management experts out there. Not that I'm I'm saying that we fall in that same category as these folks, but I'm thinking in specific of Aubrey Daniels. And, you know, we tend to believe that people behave in the manner for which they receive reinforcement. So in an organizational context, then, motivators exist in both documented and undocumented forms. And they sometimes exert unintended pressure on individuals to act in ways that may be counter to achieving the organization's goals. So while we will discuss a methodology or some things to think about when trying to identify and understand these hidden motivators, we're going to be doing so in the context of behaviors, which is not as easy to quantify as measuring things like response time that we've talked about in the past.
Okay, that's good, Nathan. Before we get started, then, why don't I outline our discussion for our listeners?
Okay.
Okay, well, first, we'll discuss what hidden drivers are and why it's important to identify and evaluate them. Mm-hmm. We'll go on to discuss how to identify these drivers, and then we'll end with a wrap-up.
Okay. Hey, that sounds good. That sounds good.
Okay, then. Well, identifying hidden motivators and understanding their impact on the organization's success seems to me to be an important part of a strategy analysis. Can you start by explaining why this is?
Oh, sure, sure. You know, organizational alignment to common goals is needed to ensure the decisions and efforts of all the executives and managers and individual contributors produce the maximum goal-based value, or in our terms, make an organization strategy-driven. Now, when any misalignment exists in that effort, well, this serves to produce results that are not the most value-adding. In other words, we've got effort that is producing a result that is different than what our goal is. So it's wasted effort in some cases, and it diminishes the organization's value creation potential. Now, hidden performance drivers can have that detrimental type effect, and they can exist either intentionally or unintentionally. And it's certainly, especially the unintentional ones, that we would like to identify and then correct. The intentional ones take a little bit different sort of effort.
Okay, well, I'll buy that. But since you mentioned that those could be intentional, that sounds like it might be a bit of a hot topic then.
Well, yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, we'd like to think that everyone comes to work in the morning seeking to do the best that they can for the organization, and that no one would seek to reduce the organization's effectiveness. Mm-hmm. However, on occasion, individuals, typically in self-interest, will make decisions or act in a way that is detrimental to their organization. And it may not be just detrimental to their organization. These things can be detrimental to the organization, to the stakeholders, that could be shareholders. It can be to the business community in total. And so we'll discuss this in more detail later on when we get to examples of undocumented hidden drivers.
Okay, I'm curious to hear that. But let's go to some examples then. We said earlier that hidden drivers could be documented or undocumented. So could you provide some examples of each of these types of hidden drivers for us?
Okay. Well, let's start out with the more tangible documented drivers.
Okay.
Okay. These tend to be embedded in organizational processes. In other words, to quote a popular TV show, They're hidden in plain sight. So examples, the quick list of documented drivers would include compensation and incentive plans, incentive plan time frames, work group performance measures, and then, of course, policies, procedures, and performance standards. Now, going into a little more detail with each of these four items and giving some examples of each. So for the first one, we talked about compensation and incentive plans. By design, compensation and incentive plans reward individuals for specific behaviors. But if the behaviors specified and rewarded aren't aligned with the organization's goals, then it's likely that we're going to have a driver that causes the individual to behave in a manner that diminishes our ability to achieve those mission goals. Now, one thing I guess I want to emphasize here is that the impact of a misalignment between compensation and incentive rewards on the organization is more significant at higher levels of the organization. So in other words, if I have a misalignment at the executive level, that'll be much more significant than if it exists at an individual contributor level. And this is because of the greater influence and span of control that an executive has relative to an individual contributor.
That makes sense.
Okay. Well, and to this end, now I've seen examples of this occur where a plant manager was incentivized to restore the operation of his facility quickly following an equipment failure, but was not at the same time incentivized to maximize overall capacity. So if we think about this, okay, I'm the plant manager at a manufacturing facility, and I have an assembly line, and my performance goal rewards me if I get a quick turnaround or a short unavailability duration if the assembly line goes down for an equipment failure. But I am not incentivized at the same time to maximize the overall capacity output of my plant. Okay?
Okay.
So, subsequently then, I as this plant manager will endorse temporary or quick fixes to get my assembly line back online and running. But temporary quick fixes are often just that. And they lead long-term to more failures and more shutdowns. So while I can be successful for getting that turnaround time to be very short, the overall capacity of my plant is actually diminished. Had I taken a little longer outage and fixed things correctly, then I can avoid having those subsequent shutdowns and my overall capacity is higher, which is really what's in the best interest of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So does that one make sense?
That does, and that's a great example.
Okay. The next one, and this is on a similar kind of thought process, is incentive plan timeframes. Now, in the case of executive incentives, payouts often occur sometime in the future in order to promote increased accountability for sustained organizational performance. So I'm thinking of things like options being paid out that you can redeem 2 or 3 years out into the future.
Like a long-term incentive.
Exactly. Okay, it applies mostly to executives because individual contributors don't often share in that same kind of bonus program. And so their incentives tend to be more annually driven.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, these time frames might limit, unintentionally, the duration of the projects executives will endorse. Okay? Long-term projects have elevated risk associated with them. So if I've got a long-term project that I as an executive am being asked to endorse, and when I say long-term, it's longer term than my incentive payout, I may be taking on risk today that I might not be here tomorrow to realize. Okay?
So you might not be accountable for what happens the longer term.
That's right. Because if I look around and, okay, I have a three-year options plan, average tenure in my position's 5 years, and I have a project that takes 9 years to bring to fruition. And an example that comes to mind off the cuff is the research and development that is required to formulate, say, a new prescription drug by, you know, one of the big pharmaceutical companies like Merck or Pfizer or the like. Mm-hmm. Or it could be any of a number of R&D projects. That one just comes to mind. Okay. Now, there's other reward systems that reward executives for near-term results, and that's reward systems that reward executives for quarterly performance results that they report out to Wall Street. And a lot of times there'll be cost-cutting measures that'll be put in areas such as research and development to make the quarterly numbers or even sometimes the annual numbers look good, but really hurt the company long term because competitors who are not cutting are keeping that R&D pipeline going, and then they'll realize the new innovation later. Mm-hmm. And this might happen if you have, say, an executive who's coming of their term. So, again, it gets back into the time frame of the incentive program. Okay?
Yes, that makes sense.
All right. The next one is similar to the first two in that it has to do with a performance measurement, but this is now not maybe something that is immediately incentivized through, you know, an annual compensation reward, but feeds into maybe more of a general performance assessment, and their work group performance measures. Okay? Now, I find that these kind of performance measures provide periodic, often very public, reinforcement of performance. And by public, I mean they're posted throughout the company. And so they tend to drive individuals to behave in a manner that results in a positive outcome of that particular performance measure. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, just like we said before with compensation and incentive plans, if the work group performance measures are not aligned with the higher level mission goals, they're going to tend to drive behavior to diminish mission achievement. An example here would be to measure and reward productivity without a balancing quality measure. People will begin to, in order to produce more in a given time frame, take shortcuts. And those shortcuts will tend to increase the error rate that they and then subsequently reduce the quality of the product that they're producing. When we have a product that goes out that is lower than what our quality goal is, well, our warranty program is defined and established based on a certain quality level assumption. And so now we'll start seeing more warranty repairs being done, warranty returns. People are not getting the same product or quality product that they're expecting, so we'll lose goodwill, could translate into lower sales. Subsequently, our overall profitability starts to draw off. If profitability starts to draw off, then the contribution that we provide back to stakeholders, whether it's rewards to our executive team, compensation to employees, or return on the investment to stakeholders, all gets diminished. And that just, you know, is not the goal of any organization. Mm-hmm. So again, workforce performance goals or work group performance goals can have a tremendous impact on, you know, the organization and be one of those hidden drivers. The last one, Luke, that we talked about, policies, procedures, and standards. People are also going to behave in a manner in which they're very specifically directed to. And policies, procedures, and performance standards give them that very specific direction. So this isn't a matter now of I'm interpreting what I think a performance measure means and I'm acting in a way I think might influence it. These are actually directions that people are given. Mm-hmm. Well, on occasion, I've found in working with different organizations that they've got within these documents some misalignment with their organization's goals. And oftentimes it happens because, you know, we had a problem or we had a unique situation arise and we altered our policy or our procedure to deal with that specific situation. But then as time goes on, well, if maybe the equipment deficiency or maybe there's a regulation that's, you know, something we have to respond to as a company, it changes. And we don't change our procedure back. We don't eliminate that workaround. So the shortcoming or that temporary fix now remains embedded in the procedure. And people start doing this as a way of business over and over and over again, and it becomes embedded in the organization as this is how this is done. And yet, that workaround was probably not very efficient. It was to get us through a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so now we're diminishing our efficiency, which diminishes our effectiveness, which, you know, overall reduces the value we're able to deliver out to, again, our stakeholders. And it reduces the overall value of our organization. And again, I've seen this happen most frequently when you're dealing with an equipment deficiency. So my assembly line, we have some sort of malfunction, and so we develop a workaround to you know, get us through this hard time with this particular equipment malfunction. And then it becomes lost after the equipment gets fixed, and we keep this ineffective, inefficient process going on for longer than what was intended.
You know, I've actually seen that myself, far mm-hmm. too many times. In my experience, it seems like that's something that happens way too often in today's world.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, sometimes it's hard. I've seen people, or I should say organizations, put in place tracking mechanisms. So they actually, you know, put in like a log, just a running list of, here are the little workarounds we're doing for these deficiencies. And it could be a commitment that comes up, a regulatory commitment, or it could be an equipment deficiency. And it's tied to whatever mechanism or documentation system that's driving the fix for that problem. And the last thing they do when they implement that fix is they get rid of this workaround. And that can be an effective way of avoiding this from happening. But inevitably, it seems that this always happens.
Far too often.
Yeah, yeah.
Nathan, those are some excellent examples, and thank you for sharing those. And mm-hmm. it sounds to me like the documented hidden drivers really do result from a lack of understanding of the impact of the reward or policy being created, or even the omission the omission of closeout actions to eliminate an unneeded practice once a condition necessitating that existence eliminated, like you just mentioned.
That's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And that wraps up episode 1 of Identify the Hidden Drivers. As always, we hope you enjoyed this edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. and would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. Note that additional information regarding strategic analysis is contained within the Strategic Analysis White Paper, accessible by registered members on the Strategy Driven website. Registered members also gain access to the many other Strategy Driven White Papers, models, and members-only categories, and registration is always free. So until next time, so long.